105 FM WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. Coming up next, Joy of Resistance with Fran Locke.
Husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy of resistance. We have found this joy in resistance. For those who gain by keeping women down, we say your numbers up, don't underestimate our persistence. Joy of resistance. We have found this joy in resistance. We're keeping organized together. We have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. Sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
And good morning. This is the Joy of Resistance, Multicultural Feminist Radio at WBAI. Now celebrating our 20th year of broadcasting at this great station. Our subject today is a disturbing but very important one. It is nothing less than the sexual exploitation of Ukrainian women as they escape from their country that is being destroyed and bombed. 98% of Ukrainian refugees arriving at train stations in Poland, Romania, Hungary, and other countries bordering Ukraine are women and children who have fled the bombing of their country and are drained, frightened, and traumatized, separated from husbands and brothers, and vulnerable, and wondering how they're going to feed their families. But they are being met at these train stations. They are being targeted by sex traffickers who want to exploit these vulnerabilities. We're going to be talking about that today. At the same time, searches for porn featuring Ukrainian women in war scenarios are spiking on the internet. Porn ads with named things like "We are bombed and we bleep sexual activity" or "porn action during the war in Ukraine" are getting lots and lots of hits. And this is, in a way, part of the normal monetizing of tragedy by the porn industry. So we're going to be looking at what is happening to Ukrainian women and how it affects really all women, with two giants in their field. We have tremendously wonderful and important guests today. They are Taina Bien-Aimé, who is the director of Coalition Against Trafficking of Women, a longtime organization. She has devoted her life to ending violence and discrimination and exploitation of women around the world. And our second guest is the very celebrated Gail Dines. She is a leader in the movement against pornography and the exposing of pornography and how it affects our identities and our sexuality and how it is structured as an industry. So we're going to be speaking in depth today with both of these tremendously dedicated and very, very important women. And that's going to be for most of the hour. We will not be doing our newscast today. As you know, we generally keep you up with everything that's happening in the world as women around the world struggle for full equality, for human rights, for liberation that's going on in every single country and culture. We're not going to be doing that today. We're going to be focusing on this very critical topic. We will be back with the feminist news next week. We also want to let you know that we are in our 20th year this April. In April of 2002, Joy of Resistance began broadcasting our feminist show on WBAI. We've been doing it ever since. And we have just covered such a range of topics. It would be impossible to summarize quickly. Just a few highlights. We've, of course, covered the right-wing backlash against abortion rights that was going on long before Amy Coney Barrett got onto the Supreme Court. We introduced the concept of reproductive justice to the WBAI audience. That is a woman of color take on the abortion rights struggle. We have, of course, covered the Me Too movement. We have covered just about every piece of legislation for women in this country, and we have covered legislation in much of the rest of the world. I could go on and on. We bring you a fresh take. We bring you important guests. We bring you a radical analysis. And we're very proud of having been on the air, lasted this long, one might say, at WBAI, because there are so many great shows, and it is just an honor to be holding space here. So I want to ask you, before we get into the subject of our show, if you will consider during this show becoming a sustaining member of WBAI to show both your support for this great radio station and for this very important show and very important topic of feminism, which is the movement of women for our liberation as women. And this is the show that covers it, all of it. You can support us today, and we do hope you will, by calling our pledge number at 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, saying you'd like to become a WBAI buddy, which you can do in any amount over $10 a month. Your commitment is only for 1 year, and will painlessly be taken out of your bank account or credit card, and you will know that you are part of the WBAI family. And for those of you who really love and understand what we are doing on this show, Joy of Resistance, you will be letting WBAI know that this is an important show, an important topic, that you support its continuation. You can also, of course, become a WBAI buddy by going to WBAI.org, and you will see very high up a box, a big box with a picture of a bird, and it says buddy, and you just press that, and that will take you to it. You can also make a donation in any amount in support of this show. That is also very easy to do. You can go to programs on the WBAI website at WBAI.org. You can look for Joy of Resistance. They're all alphabetical. And when you get to our page, it will say if you wish to either become a buddy or make a donation in the name of this show, click here. And here is an interactive link, and you can then do that. We really appreciate your support today, especially in April, as we celebrate 20 years of being on WBAI. So we're going to begin with a little bit of music, and then we're going to get to our first guest, who is Taina Bien-Aimé, and she is a major activist in ending sexual exploitation of women around the world. And our topic for today is specifically what is happening to Ukrainian women as they debark from trains at the borders of various countries bordering Ukraine. It's a serious situation, and it really affects all of us, so you need to know about it. So please stay tuned as we listen to Tina Turner leading us into this show.
Sign to stay.
And let's see, do we have Tayuna Bien-Aimée on the line?
Hi, how are you? How are you feeling?
Oh, good morning. So glad you are here with us on WBAI. Welcome. Let me give you a brief introduction. Tayuna Bien-Aimée is the Executive Director of Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, or CATW. She has dedicated her career to ending sexual discrimination, violence, and exploitation against girls and women around the world. She's one of the founding board members of Equality Now, an international human rights organization, and later served as the executive director for a decade. As executive director of Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, Tayuna continues to advocate for the right of each individual to enjoy the full spectrum of fundamental human rights. And she also serves as the on the boards of the New York Women's Foundation, New York City Commission on Gender Equity. And her work on gender justice is just really, really known and celebrated and long term. She's in it for the long haul. And I'm a great admirer of yours, Tayuna. And once again, welcome to Joy of Resistance.
Thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful introduction. Thank you.
Oh, it's an honor. Well, very well deserved. I think it's activists like you who are really stay with it, who are responsible for so much of, well, the good stuff and the bad stuff that hasn't happened, that's going on all around us, which we don't often get to celebrate. All right, we're going to get right into our subject, which is the situation going on the borders of Ukraine, Poland, Hungary, Romania, etc., where women and children who are escaping bombardment of their country, arriving in trains, and sex traffickers are waiting to greet them and offer them solace and all kinds of things, which I know you'll go into, at a time when they are extremely vulnerable. And I would like you to, first of all, begin by defining what sex trafficking is and talking about the situation that's happening right now.
Well, thanks again for having me. And before I talk about sex trafficking, I just wanted to remind everyone that in any armed conflict, and Lord knows there are a multitude around the world, women and girls are particularly vulnerable to sexual violence and sexual exploitation and sex trafficking. And the list is long, from Bosnia to Haiti to Iraq, the Tigray region, Myanmar. I mean, the list is long. So the latest addition to this dreadful list is the Ukraine. And as we know, we're getting reports of organized rapes, organized sex trafficking, sexual exploitation. And, you know, this is a reminder that from time immemorial, women and girls have been spoils of war or political repression, and we have not learned from past experience. So in terms of sex trafficking, I like to tell people that human trafficking in general is just a vehicle through which traffickers and exploiters bring their prey to an end destination. So in labor trafficking, that end destination can be agricultural settings, farms, nail salons. In sex trafficking, that end destination is the sex trade, which includes prostitution, pornography, escort services, brothels, street prostitution, etc. So in terms of what's happening in the Ukraine, there are a plethora of articles and reports that are variations on the same theme. Exploiters are highly organized at the borders. We are monitoring what is happening on sex buyers boards, for instance, where sex buyers, men who specifically want Ukrainian women, are asking their local brothels whether they have arrived yet. We know that at the border, and as you know, Europe has has many borders. They're very porous borders. Recently, the UN Commission on or the UN Agency for Refugees asked the UK government not to pair up single men with Ukrainian women because of exploitation. In Germany, where prostitution is legalized, we are seeing reports of men who are at the border with orange vests saying, I have a private room with a bathroom for you. I can help. I mean, the brazenness is flagrant. Yesterday I was just having a meeting with someone from the UN Office of Drugs and Crimes who was saying that also involved are organized criminal networks from Ukraine who actually recruit women at the borders, particularly in Poland, to welcome Ukrainian women and children for exploitation. So, you know, to counter out these brazen recruitment efforts, obviously there are certain groups, including women-run shelters that are issuing warnings to women at the borders. They're sharing numbers for national hotlines. But the level of not just corruption, but also opportunity, right? Because sex trafficking and the exploitation of prostitution are crimes of opportunity. They're crimes of abuse of vulnerability. And so all of the ingredients are there for the Ukrainian war refugees who are overwhelmingly, if not almost exclusively, women and children.
Yeah, this is... It's so sad and it's so horrifying and it's so necessary that we know about it. Why are the traffickers particularly interested in these women, and what is likely to happen to them if they accept any of the offers that are being made that, you know, really might be very appealing in the very desperate conditions that they are now living in?
Well, the primary reason why we have sex traffickers and pimps and other exploiters is because there's a market for it. And people seem to forget that. Like, women and children are not trafficked in a vacuum. It's because there is a vibrant market of sex buyers who are seeking, specific women. So the sex trade is highly, segregated by race. It's a racist, sexist enterprise. Ukrainian women, especially here in the United States, are highly coveted because they are tall, blonde, and blue-eyed without any, you know, stereotypes, but that would be sort of the overall characteristic of Ukrainian women. So here in the U.S., because the sex trade, including pornography, is and Gail Dines, I understand, will be following me, and so she's the expert on this, but it really basks in racist, sexist, negative stereotypes. So Ukrainian women usually go into what we call, not they go into, they are recruited into what we call high-end prostitution. So escort services, the high-end strip clubs that we see on the West Side Highway. I live in Manhattan. And so, yes, they would be highly coveted to many sex buyers. And then again, when you take a country like Germany, where prostitution is legalized and decriminalized, there is an estimated 1.2 million men who purchase sexual acts every day. So with that extraordinary level of demand, there's always a requirement of sort of fresh supply of women that that are furnished through sex trafficking. And so that's how the links are made between sex trafficking and the sex trade. So without a market, there would be no sex trafficking.
There would be no sex trafficking. All right. What are some of the conditions that any women who accept these offers might find themselves in? Let's say in Germany, where, as you said, prostitution is completely decriminalized. What are the conditions?
I mean, I don't think we can describe the horrors on this radio show, but you can just imagine, you know, we're starting to have an understanding of the lifelong impact of sexual violence on human beings, especially women. So just imagine what a woman would go through in an enclosed environment like a brothel or certainly under the control of a third party exploiter, including a pimp or a brothel manager, where they open the doors to men who want to exercise their sexual fantasies at any cost. I mean, once you purchase another human being, that human being no longer is one. That human being becomes an object through which you can exercise any fantasy of sexual violence, degradation, dehumanization, insults, etc. We, as a country in the United States, as an international community, have no data, have not had the political will to collect the data on the pervasive, lifelong psychological, physical, and medical harms of prostitution on human beings. Like, what does the serial sexual invasion by men you don't know for money do to another human being? And so, you know, prostitution is like an adhesion contract. You know, it's like when we purchase, when we want to buy a phone, where there are like 5 pages of terms of services and 0.5 font. You just want your phone. You're just going to click, I agree. And so it's the same thing. Like for $100 or 50 euros, I can do anything to you. You don't exist.
So a lot of, there's a whole movement of, quote, sex workers that basically claim that this is a freely chosen occupation and that the only problem is police and the criminalization of it. Is there a hard and fast line between sex trafficking and, quote, sex work?
So the term, quote-unquote, sex work is a term that was invented and coined by the sex trade and its supporters. And it's been a brilliant strategy because 30 years later, you can't find not one mainstream media outlet here or anywhere else who doesn't use the term to define a highly exploitative multi-billion-dollar industry. So, of course, we believe that people in prostitution should not be criminalized, arrested. Instead, they should be offered services. But also, this should not be decriminalized, right? We have to look at this as a system that is on the continuum of gender-based violence and discrimination, and there are perpetrators who cause harm, including sex buyers, pimps, and they're the ones who are to be held accountable. So, I mean, are there people who go into the sex trade freely? Probably, you know, and we would say anywhere between 1% to 5% of the prostituted population. But the vast majority of people who are in prostitution have had histories of childhood sexual abuse. They were homeless. They were in foster care. I mean, showing acute vulnerabilities that traffickers and the sex trade itself preys upon itself. So I think our conversation now is extremely muddled. People are very confused between the people who are being bought and sold versus the entire system, like who are the actors and elements that contribute to the sex trade. And it's very confusing, but it's also, I often say, our conversation around prostitution is the same conversation we had 50 years ago around domestic violence, where is this a crime or is this just a bad marriage? And if she really didn't like it, she would leave or she could leave or, and so I think we're we have to listen to the survivors. There's a growing global extraordinary movement of sex trade and prostitution survivors who tell the truth. The media is not interested in speaking to them, but they are out there changing the world.
Okay. In the few minutes we have left, can you talk about any legislative models that would be going in the right direction, in your opinion, in terms of this sex industry?
So again, being in New York, I can talk about there is a bill that is being sponsored by Senator Liz Krueger, a New York State senator, and on the Assembly side by Assembly Member Pamela Hunter, called the Sex Trade Survivors Justice and Equality Act, which is based on what is known as the Swedish Nordic model, now known as the equality model, which does exactly what we were talking about. It decriminalizes people engaged in prostitution. It offers them services, including exit strategies, but it maintains the accountability for patronizing or sex buying, and certainly for third-party exploiters. If New York or any other jurisdiction would follow the footsteps of Germany or Netherlands, we would see an exponential increase of sex trafficking and also the creation by the state of a market of exploitation for the most vulnerable people.
Right, because it grows where it is completely decriminalized as opposed to targeting demand and management, the Johns, the Pimps, et cetera, which the equality model does. You get a situation that is super, super, super exploitative, such as you have in Germany, where it's been completely decriminalized, where it becomes a kind of hub of sex buyers from all over the world, as could happen around here unless we choose the right road to walk down on, which the one you're talking about shrinks the sex trade while at the same time not targeting the women involved, right? And of course, the people involved are about 98% women. So do I have that right?
You have that exactly right. It's just simple economics, supply, demand, and the incentive for profit. If the state greenlights sex buying, they increase the demand. In order to meet that demand, sex trafficking occurs.
Yeah. All right. I'm so sorry we have to end the conversation now, Tyena. It's been a pleasure to have you as always, and I hope you will come back, because this is a much larger conversation, from the exploitation of women in terrible circumstances right now, fleeing the bombing of their country, to what's happening on our streets. It's really kind of one sex exploitation system. Hundreds of billions of dollars are involved, and we really need to know about it and how it is intertwined with all of our lives. Thank you so much for your work, Tyena Bien-Aimée, director of CATW, Coalition Against Trafficking in Women. How can people get in touch with your organization?
Well, you can go on our website at catwinternational.org, and thank you for your work, Fran.
You're so welcome. All right. Take care and have a good spring day, as we are all being lucky enough in this area of the world to be able to enjoy. Thank you again, Tyena.
Thank you.
We are now in a minute. We are going to go on to Gail Dines, who is a leader in the understanding of pornography, because women in Ukraine are also being exploited on the internet all over the world as searches for war pornography, and particularly pornography with sex with Ukrainian women, as these requests spike. And that's been noted by many people. And what does all that mean? And we're going to be discussing that with Gail Dines in just a minute. We're going to have a musical break right now. Please do stay tuned.
Your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. Do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money, and any old music will do.
And this is the Joy of Resistance Multicultural Feminist Radio at WBAI in New York City. We are here celebrating our 20th year on the air, bringing you unique, radical feminism. Yes, no holds barred feminism. And we are so proud to have lasted in an often anti-feminist environment in this world and sometimes even on the left. And we are here. We have you as our audience. We are so proud to be in our new time slot at 11 a.m. on Thursdays. That's Eastern Time. Okay. We are going to move on with our conversation on the present exploitation of Ukrainian women, the sexual exploitation of Ukrainian women, and how that is part of a larger global system. Our next guest is Gail Dines, and she is a very celebrated leader in the fight to understand pornography and how it is affecting all of us. She's a professor of sociology and women's studies at Wheelock College. She's also the chair of the American Studies Department there. She has researched and written about the porn industry for over 20 years. She's internationally acclaimed as a leading expert on how pornography shapes our identity and our sexuality. She's a consultant to many government agencies and many countries, actually. She's written extensively. She'd written some great books. One is called, Stop Porn Culture. One is called Pornland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality. She's appeared on ABC, MNBC, CNN, BBC, CBC, she's been in the New York Times, The Guardian, Vogue, Marie Claire, Cosmopolitan, etc. We could go on. And she has been a guest, I'm proud to say, on Joy of Resistance a number of times. Good morning, Gail.
Hi, Fran. How are you?
I'm getting over COVID, actually, and beginning to feel a little bit better. Everybody wear a mask.
Very difficult
time right now. And how are you, Gail?
I'm fine, thank you. Fine. I'm sorry to hear you've had COVID.
Yeah. It's not pleasant. Again, wear a mask, please. This variant seems to be running amok, and we need to protect ourselves. I am a witness to that. I did protect myself. It's very contagious. Be careful.
Okay.
Let's go to our topic for today. We're talking about the exploitation of Ukrainian women, the sexual exploitation of Ukrainian women, even as they escape the horrific bombardment of their country and arrive penniless and desperate at various borders such as Poland, Hungary, Romania. We're also talking about a huge spike in pornographic searches featuring these same Ukrainian women, because apparently there are many men around the world who get off on this kind of horror that is going on. And I think it's important we understand that connection. So as somebody who has really explored what that is all about, can we begin by talking about some of these trending numbers in pornographic searches featuring the women of Ukraine and what that means?
Yes. I have to say, I wasn't surprised, but it still just made me realize how predatory the porn industry is and how they have the capacity to take any atrocity and sexualize it. So in the beginning of the war, the trending term on Pornhub was Ukraine. And some of the videos, which I can't give the exact titles, were like Russian soldier, bleep, Ukrainian women, or Russian soldier going off to war, but rapes Ukrainian women before. So, and then you had images that looked like soldiers. And interestingly, of course, you never see what's called rape on these pornographic on websites, because most mainstream porn, the women are always presented as wanting it. No matter what you do to her, no matter how awful, no matter how body punishing, she says yes, yes, yes. Which, again, in its own way, is a terrible message to men to say that, you know, women want this. So what we saw was this sexualization of, you know, probably the most desperate women in the world at the moment, because, you know, as you said, they're leaving penniless. The men are not leaving, so they're often leaving alone with their children. And then we know that the traffickers have set up camp around the borders, especially around Poland, where basically they're kidnapping women, or they're offering them fake jobs or fake passports. And then, of course, they're being trafficked into the sex industry. So really, I think what it tells us is so much about what pornography is about, which is the sexualization of women's complete disempowerment. That's what makes porn hot. And this is one very, you know, contemporary and absolutely awful example.
Right. So this is going on around the world, these spikes in these searches, because Ukrainian women are considered very hot right now because they are undergoing what they are undergoing. And this is a constant theme of porn, as I understand it. You refer to pornography as hating on women. Some people think it's, you know, innocent, erotic filming. What do you base this characterizing of it?
Well, it's based on, you know, 30-odd years of researching pornography. And what becomes very clear, and I think Andrea Dworkin was one of the first to really talk about the way is the eroticization of male domination. That's what makes porn work. And it's very interesting when you look at men who are habitual or addictive users of porn, it's never to so-called softcore porn. It's always to the hardcore. And I think what really makes porn hot, you know, for men, is that they get to play out their fantasies, they get to masturbate to them, of women being completely controlled by men. That is the standard narrative of pornography. And as I said, the second narrative is she's considered so debased, so dehumanized, that she will accept and welcome anything that men can do to her. So, you know, the messages and the tropes that come out of pornography are so tied to misogyny, violence against women, and we have to remember children as well in the Ukraine are being trafficked, you know, from the Ukraine into other countries. We know that they're being taken into Russia as well, and I assume, you know, we've not seen any data or research yet. My assumption is that these women who are being taken into Russia are also being trafficked into the sex industry. So this is what pornography is. Pornography is distilling patriarchy down to its core, what it thinks of women. And I don't think that most men or boys are born wanting this, but the pornography industry grooms them and socializes them into finding this arousing. I don't see this as a biological reality. I see it as a cultural reality firmly located within the material reality of patriarchy.
Yeah. Well, it's so shocking, really. Of course, looking at, you know, the sympathy of the world net right now is on Ukrainian refugees from the bombardment. And to think that on top of that, women are being exploited in these various ways. This is being seen as a sexual turn on can be very difficult to cope with. What is it about pornography that seeks out these kind of situations? Why is it intrinsically, if you think it is, connected to this kind of extreme vulnerability, and why is there this increasing need for it? What's the psychology of it?
Well, it's both the sociology and the psychology of it. Is that what happens with pornography? Is that because you are socializing men into becoming aroused by images of violence against women, they get desensitized very quickly, and the more desensitized they get, the more they're seeking out violent imagery. I mean, what's really astounding is when you look at when pornography really kind of cannibalized the internet, which was literally around 2000 when the internet became domesticated, that made pornography more affordable, anonymous, and accessible. And overnight, it was hardcore. There was no sort of softcore versus hardcore. All the so-called softcore porn like Playboy, Penthouse, all of those disappeared. And what you got immediately in 2000 was hardcore. So what's happened is you've now got a whole generation of men who have been brought up on hardcore porn who are not interested in any images other than hardcore porn. And what we know, for example, from studies is that the more they become habituated to it, the more they're likely to seek out, for example, child sexual abuse images, bestiality, all of these things. This is kind of the rabbit hole that men go down once they become desensitized. And it's mainly because, you know, porn really burns out the dopamine receptors. And it's like asking a whiskey drinker to go back to beer. It's not going to work. You want the thud of the violence. So when you go on Pornhub, and we know from studies that over 90% of images on the main porn sites have violence against women in them, I'm surprised it's not 100%, because I don't think I've ever seen any images on the tube sites, the porn tube sites, that don't have violence against them. And interestingly, you know, when some academics have argued, oh, only 3 to 4% of images have violence against women in them. And when you look at the methodology of these studies, how they define violence is if she says no, which, of course, is ludicrous, right? Because they never say no in pornography. The word that never used in pornography is no. And so when you really define the violence as the body pounding degradation of women's bodies, then virtually, I don't think I've ever seen porn that's not, because that's what makes porn porn. You know, it's not a surprise. That's the very thing that makes pornography pornography. And this generation of boys growing up with it has to be contrasted with their father and grandfather's generation, who would maybe get a few sneak, you know, views of Playboy or Penthouse. But today, you know, it's not a matter of finding your father's Playboy. It's just go onto any porn website. You've no age verification, nothing. And any boy, and you know, the average age of boys looking at porn, this is the hardcore free porn, is, depending on which study you're looking at, between 8 and 11. And often their first viewing of porn is not intentional. The porn industry is coming after them. They want the younger boys because the younger they are, the more the porn industry can actually determine and shape their sexual template. And the more you do that, the more likely you're going to have porn addicts as they grow up.
And this is, of course, fueled by a multi-billion-dollar profiteering industry. Can you give us any figures on that?
There are no figures, because most of the porn companies are privately held. So, of course, it's almost impossible to come up with. It's, you know, multi-billion. We don't know how many billions, but when you look at how much pornography is consumed, and it's increasing, by the way, every year when Pornhub comes out with its yearly statistics, we see more and more men and boys going to more and more harder porn. So we can never find stats. The porn industry does not share their statistics in terms of how
okay.
much money they make.
Yeah.
So we don't
we
know. And also, you know, we know they make money as well from the landing page of Pornhub and X-Hamster is very expensive real estate. And they sell, they've got advertisements on the landing page. And also, what a lot of people don't know is that Pornhub, which is owned by MindGeek, actually harvests more data than even Hulu and Netflix from its users. So it uses that data and sells it onto other porn sites. So that's another way it makes money. There's multiple ways it makes money.
Right. So it's an endless maw that needs to be fed. We certainly have many reports of young women in the dating scene, this is in this country, who are dating these young men and boys who are influenced by porn, who are asking them or demanding of them in many instances to do very painful practices because they've seen it on porn. And this is the dating game that's going on in this country, just to speak of the influence. on the culture that is around us. Gail, I want to turn our attention back to Ukraine specifically as a country, because it is not only been a magnet for sex traffickers, but it has featured, Ukraine has undergone a kind of economic decomposition that a lot of countries that were formerly part of the USSR underwent with the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. And its economy has apparently gone from bad to worse. I think there's a slight uptick in recent years, but it's still pretty bad. So that so many women in Ukraine have been forced to emigrate, so many men also to find work elsewhere. And it really never recovered. The gross domestic product is very low, the unemployment rate is very high, etc. So you will find that the Ukraine is a hub for many sex exploitative practices. For instance, mail order brides. Mm-hmm. I have a quote here from an article you recently wrote in Ms. Magazine that talks about, let's see, here it is. It's basically an advertisement for mail order brides from the Ukraine. And it says, feminism is not an issue for Ukrainian women, so they don't look for much equality in relationships. And they literally give all the power to the men. And it goes on and on that way. Yeah. So Ukraine is does not rate high in the indexes for, so parity between the sexes. It's got only a 12% rate of representation in parliament, et cetera, et cetera. And while younger women are getting more feminist, it's a pretty backward country in that way. So you have the mail order brides, you have a lot of surrogacy, women renting out their bodies for surrogacy, et cetera. Can you talk a little bit about that connection with the economics of Ukraine and what is happening?
Yes. Well, first of all, I mean, Ukraine is not unusual in terms of when you look around, the former Soviet bloc. So let's think about what happens to these women. They're desperate financially, absolutely desperate. And so wherever you get desperate women, you get traffickers, you get sex tourism, and one of the reasons you get it in Eastern Europe is because most of the women there are white. So these, especially around surrogacy, when they want white babies, they use a lot of women in Eastern Europe. This has been a hub for surrogacy for years, which is an absolute form of exploitation of women's bodies. And actually what became clear during the war was you had all these women living in refugee camps who had, and I don't think there's such a thing as a surrogate mother, right? She's a mother, she gave birth. Right? If there's anything surrogate, it's the father, not the mother. So these women have given birth. They had signed contracts because, they're poverty-stricken, and it's really renting out your womb out of desperation. And now the families from the West can't go and get the children. So these women now are having children that they didn't plan on having and feeding and keeping, and they're stuck in refugee camps with the children. So that's another thing that it's brought to light. It's just how awful surrogacy is on the women. Also, we know that, we talk about contracts and everything. The reality is in a lot of cases with surrogate motherhood, so-called surrogate motherhood, the contracts are if the baby is not, quote, 100% perfect, the so-called parents who have employed the woman will not take the baby. Or if she has twins, they'll only take one. So, we really as radical feminists need to go after surrogacy because it's one more way to sexually exploit women's bodies.
Yeah.
So this is the way it works. And also mail order brides. And a lot of these, by the way, mail order brides, some of them are actually, men buying women, but also the traffickers buy them. And they think that they're going to, live with this guy and, goddess only knows what their lives are going to be like. But they're actually, in some cases, sold into sexual slavery as well. So you're going to, wherever you get poor women, vulnerable women, women with very limited access to resources, you've got the predatory industries of, the sex industry, the surrogacy mm-hmm. industry. Any industry that can exploit women sets up camp in these places where you've got poor women. And we mustn't forget the racism, right? Because they want the whiteness of the women.
Okay. Yeah. And it seems to me that what's happening with Ukraine, with its economy and many other Eastern Bloc countries that were part of the Soviet Union, is a failure of capitalism to reconstruct that society. And you have women's bodies being used to kind of shore up capitalism. And that would relate to pornography also. You know, so there is a relationship, very important relationship there between capitalism and what is happening. Would you care to comment on that? And that's, I'm afraid, going to end the interview.
Capitalism, remember, is about the exploitation of human beings, women and men here. I mean, it's built on the exploitation of human beings. And, of course, when you think about intersectionality and you look at capitalism, racism, and sexism, you know, the most exploited of women are always going to be the ones who are poor and of color. So, I mean, capitalism fails on every level. There's only a small percentage of the world that really do well. Even in the United States of America, you know, the richest country in the world, you're looking at the vast majority of people here barely, you know, managing to feed themselves or their children. So I think capitalism in and of itself as a system is a failure. It's not, but it's whole, you know, reason for existing is to make money through the exploitation of labor. That's how capitalism works. Otherwise, you know, where would you get your profit from? So, I don't know if it's a failure of capitalism, because that's what capitalism's about. The more you can exploit, the more successful capitalism is. But there are some, you know, sort of left-wing economists who do make a very good argument about at what point do you cause such social unrest through economic inequality that capitalism becomes destabilized? And I think that's a fear here in the United States, where they feel that, you know, I mean, capitalism, what it wants is it wants to exploit, but it wants a stable country. And what you're seeing also in the U.S. and in the West, and not to mention in, you know, the Global South, is absolute destabilization because of gross economic inequality. Yeah.
Gail, I'm afraid we have to end it there because we are out of time. We could talk forever, and I hope you will come back because your exploration.
I certainly will, always for you, Frank.
Yeah, your explanation on so many levels is so important, and it's all of a piece. All right, we want to thank you again for being on Joy of Resistance.
It's a pleasure, and get well soon.
Thank you, I am. So we've been speaking with Gail Dines, who is a leader in the movement to understand and rally against woman-hating pornography, which seems to be what pornography is. And we will be exploring this in future shows. This has been the Joy of Resistance Multicultural Feminist Radio at WBAI in another edition. This is our 20th year on the air at WBAI. We started in April of 2002, and we've been on the front lines of feminism, along with the history of how we got here, because we can't understand where we are without that history, for 20 years. If you support this kind of programming, please become a WBAI buddy during the show. Go to the website at WBAI.org. You'll see a big box that says Buddy. Do it in the name of Joy of Resistance. Support the fact that there is feminism, authentic feminism, on WBAI Radio. All right. We want to thank you very much for listening. We want to thank you very much for contributing. And we will be back next week. We're going to go out with Battle Hymn of the Women to give us some more fighting spirit against this huge monstrosity of exploitation of women today, centering on the women of Ukraine that we are up against in this world. But with people like Tayina Bien-Aimé and Gail Dines, we know that we have strong fighters, and we must all get involved in this. Once again, thank you so much. Have a good afternoon.
You have told us to speak softly, to be gentle and to smile. Expected us to change ourselves with every passing style. Said the only work for women was to clean and type and file. That's why we're marching on. Move on over or we'll move on over you. Move on over or we'll move on over you. Move on over or we'll move on over you. For women's time has come.
It is we who've done your cooking, done your cleaning.
Hi there. For WBAI New York, I'm Linda Perry. As we move through April, I want to take a moment to thank new WBAI buddies, new BAI buddies who joined WBAI during Women's History Month. Jane Gennaro from the Upper West Side says, thanks for the beautiful programming for Women's History Month. Lucia Calamnaro is also a new buddy. She's from Boston, Massachusetts. She says, I can't choose a favorite program. You're a treasure, WBAI. So grateful you are here. Thank you also to Michelle Babian from Yonkers, a new buddy whose message is peace with the earth. Victoria from Tarrytown appreciates all WBAI shows. Jean-Louis from Long Island loves Gary Null's show. Steve Stansel from Brooklyn, New York is now a buddy at $20 a month. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Sandra Lynn, who appreciates WBAI's new morning show, What's Going On? She's a new buddy, and so is Francois from Brooklyn. Also from Brooklyn, Ben Yee is a new BAI buddy. His favorite show is from Margaret Flowers, Clearing the Fog. Ellis Landy from the Bronx says she loves WBAI. She's a new WBAI buddy, and so is Sandra from Ringwood, New Jersey. Her favorite show is Code Pink Radio. Ken from Harlem is also a new WBAI buddy. He's contributing $50 a month. He's from Harlem. His favorite show is Imhotep Gary Bird's Radio GBE, Gloria J. Brown Marshall with Law of the Land, and other shows. He says there's so many he loves. Lloyd from Brooklyn is a new WBAI buddy. Thank you so much, Lloyd. Amma from Flushing is also a new buddy. Thank you. So is Thomasina in New Jersey, and Betty Garland, who likes Vantage Point and Mansion for a Rat. Thank you. Pedro Chinnery from Suffern, New York, is also a new WBAI buddy, showing the reach of WBAI. He appreciates equal rights and justice. Laurie from the Upper West Side likes building bridges. Mike from Brooklyn is a new buddy in the name of Con Sabor Latino. Brenda from Montclair, New Jersey, appreciates any Saturday with David Rothenberg. Thanks also to John from Chicago, a $100 buddy. Thank you so much to all of our new WBAI buddies, our monthly contributors, large and small and small and large. We so appreciate you and your continued support. If you'd like to become a WBAI buddy, just go to our website, WBAI.org, and click Buddy, or call 212-209-2950. And remember to tell us what your favorite show is. I don't have time to list all the new buddies right here and right now, but know that we thank you. Thank you so very much for your support.
This is Marcia Pendleton, producer and host of Backstage Stories on WBAI New York. The acclaimed artists Keith Joseph Atkins and Kelly Gerard will join us this week to talk about the Apollo Theater's new Black Fest, a series of newly commissioned works from some of the most exciting voices in the American theater. Join us on Thursday, April 21st at 9 p.m. for this riveting conversation on the next Backstage Stories.
Hi, this is Tony Roberts, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.
Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
Hi, this is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM.